appropriate date, but that is June.
So we're trying to figure out exactly what is labor, what is malacha, what is avoda, and to what extent does that impact on our understanding of our Shabbos issues. So let's just try to bring together everything we have been discussing until now and use that to move us forward. Essentially, we had brought up the fact that malacha Shabbos, 39 different malachos, derived from different Limudim and Gemara. Essentially, the Torah really just telling us that there's a prohibition to do malacha, and leaving it to the Torah Shebaalpeh to spell out what those 39 malachos are. And we expressed a desire to try to figure out why that should be, why did the Torah take that approach rather than simply listing out the malachos. We hadn't really fully addressed that yet. We started off the Mishnah and noted that the Mishnah focuses on people rather than actions, Hazareya v'Haforesh. And we spent some time, primarily yesterday, discussing a suggestion that some Achronim have, that the emphasis is on the individual rather than the action, because maybe that's how Malacha Shabbos works. That maybe a malacha is about your not being at rest. The Shabbos requires Lamani Anuach, you should be at rest, and you're not supposed to disturb that by doing a malacha. So if a malacha happens without disturbing your rest, let's say, for example, through asking someone else, so then that's not a violation of Shabbos on the level of Minhag Torah. So, for example, to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you, which is an Isser D'Rabbanan, a Mir La'akum, but it's not an Isser D'Oraisa, the question was raised, why not? Why is that not a problem on the level of Minhag Torah? You're having someone do malacha on your behalf. And that led to a whole approach of the Achronim that some had agreed with and some did not agree with, that maybe Malacha Shabbos is about your being at rest, and if you have somebody else do Malacha for you, okay, you brought about that Malacha, but it still does not mean you were not at rest. And we went through yesterday many different versions of that theory, many different ramifications of that theory. We went through the different proofs that are brought to both sides, how many cases the same proof is brought on both sides, and discussed a little bit the ups and downs and the ins and outs of that. So we left just a few points left, which I want to use to try to bring this whole issue into perspective. So we left off yesterday. So we mentioned that Zevin had taken the position against the majority of Achronim, against the Sam Sofer and others, who maintained there's no possibility of shlichus, the Shabbos is all about the person. And Zevin has an essay where he says he disagrees. He thinks Shabbos is about the atmosphere, it's about there being a abstention from malacha, regardless of whether or not the individual is disturbed in the process. As we mentioned, in the context of shlichus, of having somebody else do malacha for you, so the question comes up, what if it's not about amira the akum, it's not about having a non-Jew do malacha, but you're asking a Jew to do malacha for you. Not necessarily. Let's say you have brought in Shabbos and he has not brought in Shabbos. So that was my hope, which was shown in whether or not you can allow, you can ask somebody to do malacha for you if it's Shabbos for you but not for him. And the Rashba was of the opinion that you can. And that provoked the whole discussion, why should that be? Actually, Yeshua Yaakov, for example, we mentioned yesterday, took this as a proof, talk of the Shabbos is not about the act. So now you're doing the action. Here, apparently, it's okay to have a Jew do it for you. Shows that it's all about you. And the question was, how would Rezevin deal with this? And Rezevin, he does deal with it. And he suggests that, yes, that's true, because we're talking about Tosef and Shabbos. We're talking about your bringing in Shabbos personally. So if, let's say, for example, Shabbos starts at 6 on the 66th day, so plug him into 4:45. You can bring a Shabbos at any time after 4:45. So you bring a Shabbos at 5:00, let's say. And Shabbos starts the whole world at 6:00. So says Rezevin, yeah, at 6:00 it's going to be full-blown Shabbos. And then we're going to be concerned even about malacha that's happening, even if you're not directly doing that. But during the time of Rezevin, when you personally brought in Shabbos, so then the concern is simply that you should be at rest, and therefore it's okay to have somebody else do the malacha for you, because the time of acceptance is clearly a personalized time. Okay, so far so good. Everyone agreed? So, yes, sir.
It's just interesting, because even Rezevin has to take advantage, admit a little bit to the line you do on the chat, because he holds it sometimes.
So right, he holds that. An individualized Shabbos is certainly all about you. But if once Shabbos is really in, so then that's a different story. Hi.
What is Rosetta's official approach on about shlichus?
So basically, all that shlichus would be a problem. And the fact is, right, as we mentioned yesterday, in general, when you have something that's mutter ben haTorah and also be rabban, it's difficult to know what the emphasis is. Do we focus on the fact that it's mutter ben haTorah? And we focus on the fact that yes, the rabbis came and asked it, so that shows you something else. So what's the most important detail here? The fact that, let's say, when we talk about shlichus to a non-Jew, you have a non-Jew do malacha for you, so the Torah seems to say that's okay, and the rabbis prohibited it. So do we say, if the Torah says it's okay, that shows you that there's no issue, and it's only, so to speak, a rabbinical prohibition? Or do we say that no, the fact that the rabbis answered it, they answered it because it really is an issue? That was the approach, for example, of Shulchan Aruch Harav, and then we take it in that context.
So I thought that, as you said, it isn't an individual issue.
Right.
Correct.
Because he's saying, when it comes to Shabbos itself, okay. Right, on Shabbos itself, so then he's bothered even by having somebody else do it. So the approach is that these other Ephraims, and so for others, all maintain that there's no issue on a Torah level of shlichus on Shabbos. The Rabbanan is a problem. But as far as the Torah is concerned, that's not called a malacha. And if that is thought, no, maybe it is called a malacha even if you're having somebody else do it for you. So what about the Rashba who says you're allowed to do this when you bring in Shabbos and somebody else has it? Yeah, because that's about Tosefes. Tosefes is a whole different category. Now this also has major practical ramifications. For another area, what other scenario can you think of, perhaps, where you are forbidden to do malacha, but another Jew is permitted to do malacha? You have to change, right? That mentioned yesterday. So that there is a discussion as well. This is a major issue, a complex issue. Many different practical halakhic issues that come out of this question. You mentioned yesterday the whole fax and telegram issue. When you're in one time zone, somebody else is in another time zone. Are you being Machal Shabbos, if it's Friday or Moshe Shabbos for you, faxing into a Shabbat zone, also related to this issue. So here, let's say you're in a scenario where you are observing Yantar Sheni, and you are with an Israeli who is not observing Yantar Sheni. Could theoretically, depending on what you're following, have this scenario in either country, whichever case it is. So here, you are bound, you consider yourself bound by Nisim Malacha, and the other individual considers himself not bound by Nisim Malacha, or assuming that the appropriate rabbinic guidance in the circumstance. So if you are allowed to ask this individual to do malacha to you, so that would presumably also connect to this issue. Presumably be an outgrowth of this question, is there a prohibition of Amirul Yisrael when that Yisrael is permitted to do malacha? Under these unique circumstances, is there a prohibition for you to do that? Do we assume there's some type of shlichus that he is carrying out on your behalf? Hi.
So maybe a clue that since you have to change the Elios is really only Minhag HaRotzeinu versus Shabbos, which is definitely not. I mean, one is sort of much more Gadol. There's Esser on Shabbos, but Yom Kippur is only sort of suffering.
Yeah, you definitely could. The question is, so you're saying two different perspectives. Saying, first of all, in general, for every chutznik and chutzlar is to observe in the chain. So that is a good rabbanah.
Right.
The day I was in the day, I'm going to turn to the so the question is basically saying, is there a difference between the din rabbanah and the din deraisa?
Right.
That's possible, but unlikely. It's possible, there's always possibly a difference between the two. I don't know if we have any evidence indicating that it should be different. What becomes interesting in general is when you have these two people who are doing different things in the same area. So is it possible to say this is comparable to the Tosefta Shabbos case, where one of them is coming from some type of individual perspective? Let's say a chutznik in Eretz Yisrael. So in Eretz Yisrael, the din is it's not that. And you're observing it because that's the halakhic position you're taking. So maybe one could argue that that has to be viewed on an individual basis. It's a prohibition for you to do malacha in this context. But you can't say it's empty. Now the whole government is every people that are driving around. It's completely not empty. You know, people are motoring. It can't be empty. It's completely not empty at all. And then one could argue that that would perhaps be comparable to what we described a few minutes ago about Tosef Shabbos. Well, maybe we could say the inverse, that if they, Ben Eretz Yisrael, let's say, the prodigals put Malacha in Kutzlaritz, and then the Jamies, maybe the Kutzlaritz, the min is that it is essentially Yantin. And then for whatever reason, the Ben Eretz Yisrael may or may not be obligated to acknowledge that. So that's an interesting way to look at the question, that it could be that maybe there's different approaches to this issue depending on what situation we find ourselves in, with one individualized and one not. Okay, so far so good? Makes sense more or less? Okay, there's also this whole question, more formulated as a Hefter Gabra issue. I mentioned the other day it's a little questionable whether it's the right terminology or not. But if you want to say Shabbos is about the Gabra, not about the effect, not about the object of the Malacha. So just to show, be aware, we'll probably talk about this more in other contexts. But this also comes up in the context of a chola on Shabbos. Now, when you have a circumstance where it's mutter to do a malacha, because you need to save somebody's life, let's say a chola sheish bo sakana, or each issue according to its scale. So how do we do that? The debate in the Rishonim, we'll get into it a different time, whether you call that a butcher or a chuyu, right? How would you understand butcher as a chuyu? Are we saying that it's essentially that the malacha doesn't apply, or that it applies if you have an overriding need to save a life? So that pushes away. This also, try to mention the Yvonne's connection so we can feel connected to the shiva as a whole. So the question of esse del chalosa, I say, right? So what's happening when we have a clash between values? So is one winning out over the other, or is it the other one simply doesn't apply? So what's the story when it comes to a chola? Are we saying that essentially the malacha is mutter in this case? Or are we saying no, that the malacha is not mutter, but it has to be violated in order to save somebody's life? So this is the whole debate when we showed it in general, or Nassim Bishtetner, among others. Nassim Bishtetner was a great post-age test away a few months ago. He's the author of the Shubis Laharus Nassim. So he has a discussion where he said it seems to emerge from the approach that there's no shlichus, the approach that focuses on the individual. So if the individual is allowed to do what he's doing because he has the need to save a life, so then essentially it's nothing. You say that it's completely mutual because he's allowed to do the malacha, so then nothing wrong is happening. It's not that the malacha is bad, but he has to do it in order to save another life. If the malacha is neutral, it's just that he is not allowed to perform it. So when he is allowed to perform it, then that essentially makes the issue disappear within that context. That has some practical ramifications for the purposes of how Hilchos Refuah is applied. We'll come back to it, which is, again, when that time comes, be aware it also draws upon this literature, it also draws upon this discussion of what exactly is the gather of Malacha Shabbos.
Hi. Right. Which part is
that? Say that if we say that Shabbos is all about the individual, right, it means I can't do Malacha. It doesn't mean that malacha is bad. It means that I shouldn't do malacha. Three is not bad, I shouldn't be there. So if that's the case, so if we understand that three was bad, so then in circumstances when I have to do it for a chola, it might mean really I'm doing a bad thing. But I have to do it because I have to save a life. Okay? So I have to never do a bad thing. That's called three. But if we say that it's not about three being bad, it's about I'm not allowed to be Zoreya. So that if I am allowed to be Zoreya because I have to be Zorola, very far out of the whole situation, you have to think, that there is an example, that I have to be Zoreya for the purpose of the Zorola, so then I'm allowed to do it, so I'm left with no problem. Because the whole issue is that I'm not allowed to do it, and here I am allowed to do it. That's how we understand. So that's, and that has practical ramifications, which we're not going to get to now, but just be aware when that subject comes up, it also draws upon this literature of what exactly is the gather of Malacha Shabbos. Yes?
So when this connects them with personal, like the Shabbos and personal related, that promotes the idea of Kutra.
Correct.
Because Malacha related, that promotes the idea of Kutra.
Right. And I think the simplest way to say it is the way you just said it, that the question is the Malacha bad? or is the muff in neutral and you're not allowed to do it? And then look at how it plays out, that either you're doing something bad that you have to do, or no, you're allowed to do it, so therefore you're left with no problem.
Not really is if there's a call that you have to constantly be watching out. You have to buy the luck, but you have to watch out to do it as little as possible, or you just let push everything aside.
Right, or for example, when you're weighing up 50 serving, another famous question discussed in the Ron Humor, let's say you have a choice, you have to feed something into a sick person, and you have a choice, either you can feed him non-kosher food, or you can check an animal on Shabbos and it will create kosher food. So what's a bigger avera? And so Ron there discusses that even though, strictly speaking, Shabbos is a bigger avera than Trefus, Trefus is just an Issa Malkus, and Shabbos is an Issa Misa, but he discusses there that maybe there's a quantitative factor. Because if you have to shech an animal, you do it once and you're done. It's one avera. While if he's eating non-kosher food, presumably every kedayas he has is an additional avera. So maybe it was a quantitative factor. But you could also throw in this issue, that the trefus is essentially going to be chuyah, because the food is inherently, Mr. Bryson would say, the food is inherently bad. Okay, so we're letting him eat this inherently bad food because he needs it. But the malacha, if the kosher, so maybe that gives another reason to prefer violating Shabbos.
The whole thing is...
Correct, maybe. That's part of the issue, some of the issues that come up. So essentially, really just one last issue I want to mention about this that can segue us here. There are those who discuss this point who assume that even if what we're saying is true about the malachas in general, that malachas are about the individual, maybe hotzah is in its own category. We know that hotzah, or we will know, we'll talk about it more, but tzah is Nebuch, the stepdaughter of Malacha, essentially, it gets batted around. Because if you're shown in the beginning of the Seventh Shabbos, have an expression for tzah, kind of an insulting expression, they call it a Malacha Geruah. It's called literally a lousy Malacha. It's Malacha that somehow doesn't reach the level of the other Malachas. And for that reason, it has its own movement, it has its own derivation. This is how we show and explain why it has its own derivation. And it's possible that from an analytical perspective, it's viewed differently. So you will find those who say that even if Shabbos as a whole is about X, in this case about your action, Chotzah is looked at differently. Chotzah belongs to Rua. It has its own status. It has its own limud. It's about something else. That is actually then about not having something be carried. It's not about your carrying. Or, a point that was also made by the Dvar Yoshua, who mentioned yesterday, Lion Erdberg, points out something interesting. It says the whole definition of Hotzah, we're talking about carrying, so one of the conditions they carry in public is Avar Dalam, so the definition requires what we call an Akira and the Hanacha. That means you have to pick it up and you have to put it down. And if you don't have both of that, you don't have a complete Malacha. So, what does that mean? It means the malacha is defined by stopping for it. The hanacha is an act of putting yourself to rest. The same word, iman yadua, hanacha. So by definition, the whole malacha is the opposite of this whole idea. Everything else is about your disturbing your rest. While here, you complete the malacha by returning to rest, returning to a state of hanacha. Again, the same word, iman yadua. So therefore, you have to say that the lumdus of hotzah is different than the lumpus of every other malacha. But it's very relevant to this whole discussion. Because Rav Zevin uses Hotzah as a proof to his thesis. Rav Zevin says, how do I know that malacha are not defined by what you're doing, but rather is defined by what is done? How do I know that? Because look at Hotzah. We call Hotzah a Malacha Geruah. Why do we call it a Malacha Geruah? We show them how different reasons. But what's a likely reason why Hotzah is called a lousy Malacha? What separates it from other Malachas? How is it somehow connected?
You can't be an other Malacha, you're doing something to something else, you're changing to something. But Hotzah, you're just carrying something.
Okay, so where are you where are you saying that there's a distinction? What part of the equation? The Maisa really is the Maisa so different? Seems more the result. Is that what you want to say?
It's not creative.
It's not creative. Right? So we're saying that the impact on the world is less than any other malacha. The
terms of effort, Sahel itself could be easy, but it could be incredibly difficult. Right? It seems to be that it's not necessarily set aside in terms of the expression for hard work is heavy lifting. Right? So it holds on, theoretically, could be a lot of effort. It's not necessarily from an individual's perspective that holds on doesn't make the cut. So again, I'll use as the example of hard labor. But it's from the effect on the world perspective. What's the difference? Okay, it's the same object. It used to be inside, now it's outside. It used to be over here, now it's over there. It's only from the impact on the world perspective that Hotzah seems to rank lower on the scale. Says with that, then that's a proof that I'm right. That's a proof that we're interested in the result and the impact, because otherwise there's no reason to insult poor Hotzah. It's not Garua less than anything else. It's just as good as all the other Malachim.
What else would it be based on? What is done as opposed to?
As opposed to your effort. Let's say if we talk about your exertion or your doing, your exerting your rest.
Except for Zoraya, Rashi says Zoraya, there's almost no effort involved, but yet it's still go up.
And as we mentioned, I don't know if that's exactly what Rashi means, but it certainly can be effort involved. Right. You are doing something. But here, when it comes to carrying, there's no reason to term carrying as less of a disturbing of your rest than any other malacha. The only perspective from which it looks like a lousy malacha is the perspective of world impact. Now, with that point, I think we could take a stance on this issue. What stance do we want to take on this whole question? I think it's reasonable to take all of the evidence in front of us and suggest the following formulation. Now, what is Shabbos in terms of the whole question of the text of the Talmud and this and that what's about? Shabbos is really about you. Shabbos is about the individual. Shabbos is about the individual. Shabbos is about your being at rest. You're not doing the malacha. But what is a malacha? A malacha is a creative act on the world. So a malacha is defined by its impact on reality. But Shabbos is about you not doing the malacha. Follow the distinction? The Shabbos is a complicated thing. Shabbos is not about necessarily reality not being changed. Shabbos is about you're not changing reality. So yes, it's about what you're doing or not doing. But what is it that we don't want you to do? A malacha. What's a malacha? A malacha is defined as a creative act upon the world. Loosely, for our purposes now. So when we look to define the malacha itself, we're going to look at its impact. We're going to look at how it affects reality. When we look to regulate what you can do and what you can't do, we're going to look at the individual and the question of whether or not you are at rest. So essentially, yes, if I had to pick one, it's an Isser Gavra. It's about you. But what is the Isser Gavra? The Isser Gavra is that you should not affect a change upon the world. Yes?
Can you just say that distinction one more time?
Yeah, the distinction is that essentially it's an Isser Gavra. It's about you. It's about that you should be at rest. You are not allowed to do a malach. But what is a malacha? How do we understand a malacha? Is a malacha something that tires you out? Is a malacha something that you enjoy? A malacha is defined based on its creative impact in the world. So when we talk about what a malacha is something that changes the world. When we talk about the prohibition to do malacha on Shabbos, so then we're saying that's a focus on the individual. The answer is you are not allowed to do these acts. About it, that could also be the whole question that we opened with, why did the Torah phrase these things the way it does? But essentially, what's the prohibition of Torah of Shabbos? Lo sasim kol malacha. You should be at rest. You should not be doing a malacha. Now we don't know. What is a malacha? What does that mean? What is it I'm not allowed to do? So we need the Torah Shabbat to tell us 39 different scenarios in which you disturb your rest, in which you are no longer in the state of Lamanya Nua. But we don't want to have 39 psukim telling us that, because essentially this is all one issue. This is all one idea, that you should not disturb your state of Lamanya Nua by doing the malacha. And what that malacha is, there are many different ways in which you can impact the world, many different ways in which you change reality. So we have Chazal tell us, in a kind of a roundabout way, that these are the 39 different ways in which you violate this one issue of not being in a state of Lamanya Nua. Yes, sir.
So that's the understanding in the Rabbanan gave us today, the 39 malachas that would change that state. So
yeah, say the Rabbanan, just the whole problem of impossibility, Rabbanan taught us. Right, they gave us, it sounds like you're saying they're going to do our Rabbanan. So the Rabbanan told us what they were.
So does that imply that there could be other malacha that you could be creative with, or is these 39 the only ones that you could possibly be creative with, and then it doesn't figure out if there are any more?
Yes, it gets into a little bit of a discussion between a level of Minotaur or a level of Rabbanan.
I guess you'd be over Minotaur if you would be creative in some way that they didn't, in the way that they described.
Right, so that's opening up a whole avenue of discussion, an important avenue of discussion. It might be a little bit outside of our scope for now, but it gets to a couple of issues. One issue is that the question of Mishkan Chashuva that we mentioned the first day, our malacha is defined by having been in the Mishkan, having been in the Mishkan and being Chashuv, or is it completely two separate considerations? Maybe you can have a Chashuv malacha that theoretically wasn't in the Mishkan. That's one avenue by which to look at it. Maybe other malachas are right. Another approach, I mentioned Sammy here, you mentioned a few others, that there is a surprising statement in the Yerushalmi which suggests that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and when we saw this Yerushalmi when they were learning on the Shabbos for a long time, and they figured out tolus to every malacha, 39 tolus to all the 39 malachos, and then whatever they couldn't fit into the other malachos, they put it to Makkah the Pakish. And it's clearly a difficult thing, because you would assume you come from the other direction. We have malachos, and we try to see what fits into these categories. And if it doesn't fit into these categories, then it's not malach. So what does that mean? It didn't fit into any category, so they said it's makom pakish. So it's a difficult idea. So Rav Asher Weiss, for example, suggested it means that they understood that anything that is atikun, anything that creates some type of change in the world, has got to be a malach. So either it's going to fit one of the 38 categories, or it's not going to pass. But it can't be that something that creates a tikkun in the world is not going to be a malach. So he has a tremendous chiddush based on that. And the whole discussion, which we'll get to a later day, about electricity. Electricity, and this is a rice or this is a rabbana. There are many who assume it's this is a rabbana, but it doesn't necessarily match any of the 39 malachos. So Rashi Weiss thinks the halacha is a daraisa based on this, because he says that anything that is doing something to the world, as using electrical appliances, using electricity in an active way, is clearly doing, there's got to be some halacha, and that's what that Yerushalmi is telling us. So I think that's along the lines of what you're asking. But in theory, the avenue might be open to find other things as significant acts, even if they weren't necessarily traditional and indirect. Okay, so I think that's basically in terms of stage one that I wanted to essentially get out there, that we have this discussion which is going to come up in the background of a lot of malachos and a lot of applications as far as what is our focus and the approach that I think has a merit. But essentially, yes, it is about the individual, but the definition of what the individual is not allowed to do is going to be based on its impact outside of him. And that may also lead us, talk about the specific malachos, and in general there are two things that we try to figure out when we look at every malacha. What is the surah? What is the pu'ula? And what's the action? And what is the pathway? What is this malacha trying to accomplish? And essentially, this reflects really the two halves of the equation. Now, what is it that I'm not allowed to do? What is my pu'ula, my action that defines the malacha? In what way am I disturbing my rest by doing something? And what is the malacha trying to change in the world? What is the purpose of the malacha that this pool is designed to bring about? So in general, as a basic rule, as we go through the malachas, We're going to try to figure out both of those things. What is the action that I'm not allowed to do, and what is the result that I'm trying to affect within the world? And if a malacha doesn't, an action doesn't have both of those match the malacha, so very often it'll be a toldo. A toldo might be something that has one or both of those points of tangency. Usually it's that it has the same tachlis with a different action. Some understand it could be either or. Have to figure out what the proper definition is. But if it's missing the whole package, that's when we get to the discussion of toldos. If it's missing part of the whole package, if it doesn't have the whole package, that's when we get into the toldo discussion. Okay, so far so good? Okay, now there's one other point that I would like to make out of the Mishnah itself. Again, it sounds like we're spending time on introduction. All of the introduction just comes out of reading the Mishnah, right? Just coming out of reading the words of the Mishnah. So here as well, there is an important point that almost comes out of Tosfos. Say almost, because Tosfos doesn't really say it, but Tosfos started a whole discussion. And it's very interesting, just also in terms of the history of the development of Lumbus. You say different generations care about different things. They ask different questions, bothered by different issues. What might be a social problem now wasn't bothering anybody 100 years ago. So here it's just interesting. There is a Tosfos here, the first Tosfos essentially in the Mishnah, which asks a question. And Tosfos doesn't seem to answer the question. And as far as I can tell, nobody really cared about this question for several hundred years. Now, let's say the Tosfos doesn't say who was asking it. Let's say the Tosfos was written in 1150, let's say, for example. It doesn't start to become a major topic of discussion till the mid-1700s. 600 years later, all of a sudden, this Tosfos everyone's talking about. So what is this Tosfos? Tosfos, ha'usei shnei batei nirim. And Tosfos focuses on the fact that the Mishnah essentially is not trying, in this one Mishnah, bottom of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, is not trying to tell us all of Hilchos Shabbos in the Mishnah. Right, we have a very large Masechta, and more than that, which is going to go into the details of the Halacha. The Mishnah is just here to list the Avos Malachos. And perhaps even specifically only in the context of chiyuv chatos, right, what you're liable for. So there are all kinds of details that the whole Masechta worth of details the Mishnah doesn't talk about. Included in that, usually, is the concept of shiurim. Right, most of the malachos, or maybe all of the malachos, have at least a discussion of having some type of shiur, some type of minimal measurement, where less than that, it's pater. Less than that, you're not chayev achatis. Right, and when we start Zoreya, hopefully in a few minutes, that'll be the first thing that we'll take note of, that there is a discussion of what the shear should be, if any. But our Mishnah doesn't get into it. Our Mishnah doesn't list the shear. However, there are some dinim here which it says a shear. It seems to say a shear. Ha'oseh shtei batei nirin, ha'oreg shnei chutin, ha'potzeya shnei chutin, tofer shtei tfiros, ha'koseh shtei osios. In some cases, the Mishnah does list, you have to do two of something in order for it to count, apparently. So he asks Tosfos, Tzarek l'faresh lama piresh kan, u'oreg, u'potzeya, u'betofer, u'koseh, shir, tfei mibishar. How come all the other malachos doesn't tell us what the shear is? For this handful of malachos, it tells us the shear. We've got to figure that out, says Tosfos. That's the question. They don't answer it. And it doesn't seem to be that it bothered too many people until the mid-1700s, when everyone starts talking about it. Anyone want to take a stab at it? What's a possible answer to Tosfos' question here in the 2000s? Came it up first, yeah.
Everything else is a mashu.
Everything else is what?
A mashu.
It's a mashu. You're saying that the...
Meaning that nothing else really has a share. Everything else is just any of that action that these there are often you can. In order for it to be in serious, it has to be... Sorry. Like, in order for it to be a... Osu, the not
that chai in the not and the plus.
I think you're more onto something with the second half because the first half sentence is technically accurate because the other levels, many of them, if not all of them, at least many of them, do have a shear. Definitely carrying has a shear and cooking has a shear, so you know, two examples, there definitely is a shear for these malachas. We're going to talk at more length about that. Yeah, so that first part of the sentence is probably true, but the second part of the sentence might be on something you will push out in the second
part. One is that it might always be at least a lot, and only the certain share becomes punishable.
So maybe the mission is trying to create a space. And maybe there's some type of space here where there is a kiss with Garaisa, but not a few.
Right.
Hold on to that thought, because that could play a big role in the discussion.
And the second thing is that perhaps there is no share. Zoreo, there's just one seed, that's all you can do.
Right, that's what Sammy was saying, except it's not totally true, because there are. Even if that's true when it comes to Zoray, it was going to be a whole discussion. So Bishop for sure has a shear.
Yeah, there's a shade of partial cooking. I don't know what that is.
No, but also it means that's also true. But you could have too little of an amount.
What?
You can cook too little of an amount. You have less than a grover, less than a dry pig. So that is a shear. So that part of the sentence isn't necessarily true, but the suggested it maybe isn't true.
And even if you have like the Bulgaris by up. That doesn't change the result.
Okay.
That means that you're not high.
Okay, no, I think that statement is important. That sentence is definitely telling us something. Like I said, I think the thrust of what you're saying is correct, even though the technical point of whether it's sure or not doesn't seem to totally address the whole story, but there's definitely something in the second part of the sentence.
I'm not sure if it applies to all of them, but I think in general the one where he mentions at least two. So those that it's basically valueless unless you do two, you're not doing the other ones.
So you're on to an important point. So before we get to that point, everything that's been said so far is important to the discussion, so hold on to these thoughts. So the Magen Avos, we mentioned the other day, Magen Avos and Mordechai Benet. He was writing again in the 1700s. So he has an approach, a very popular approach. Hasidim cites this. And many others, such as the Arugas Habosim, the Chubas Uparel, many others on their own came to the same approach. Approach that many suggested here. That maybe when it comes to the other malachas, the shear, and this is very much along the line of what Samuel is saying will be doing, it's not so much that there's no shear from the malachas, all the malachas certainly have a shear. But the shear is an issue of significance. That the malacha exists whether you have the shear or not. But we need a shear in order for it to be significant. Let's say in terms of carrying. So carrying, you're carrying one way or another. Because we need the object to be a certain size for us to care about the fact that you're carrying. You're cooking one way or another. But we need the food item to be a certain size for us to care about the fact that you are cooking. But in these cases, so less than haorek
shtei tefiros,
less than the two, is not even called a malacha. This is reminiscent of the comment that the Iri has. The Iri on Daf Gimel, the beginning of the Masechta. The Iri talks about carrying, so we just said that you have a shear for carrying in terms of how much you can. But we could also say, all right, carrying the Rosh Hashanah Rabbin. So there's an issue, you can pay your kayak, you carry dollar amas. So what if you carry two amas? What's that? Is that a chatzi shear? Less than the shear? So there's a Meiri there states, and a problem like this idea very much. Generally, you always find the Meiri, you know, was hidden for many centuries. And you have ideas in that problem that later turn up that the Meiri said them also. One of the ideas very popular in the Afronim and then turns out to be a Meiri, that less than Dalet Amos, that's not the Malacha. The Malacha is called carrying Dalet Amos in Rosh Hashanah Rabbin. And if you're carrying less than that, it's not a happy shear, it's not less than the shear. That's simply not the Malacha at all. That's not the definition of what we're talking about. Yes, sir?
Does that mean that in the Mishnah, all the ones, the only ones that are defined by the amount of two, those are all listed in the mission, everything else?
That's the suggestion. And we had now all these nuances within that suggestion. We'll discuss it further. That seems to be what they're saying. That seems to be what the Magen Avos and his co-terrorists, terrorists, are saying, that there is essentially a definitional issue here, as opposed to the other malachos, which are not defined by this malach. Just again, to bring in the Yubamis connection to what Lushan Mordechai had for Chuba, where he has the same suggestion, he has a funny example. He says, there's a prohibition in the Torah to, and the Yubamis connection, prohibition to marry two sisters in Mordechai. Lushan Mordechai. The prohibition to marry two sisters. So maybe you should say, okay, it should be Asur to marry one sister also, but that's the Chassi Shir. So clearly we don't say that, that would be quite a problem. Now we don't say you can't marry anybody who has a sister. Because the whole nature of the Isra only becomes a problem when you have the two sisters at once. If it's only one sister, so then that's not part of the problem, less than a significant level. It's not a problem at all. So too, sometimes the definition only becomes relevant once it reaches a certain point. Now, I don't know if the tail's up, so we'll go in this order.
So that
the shear
for the other mentioned,
yes.
It's that it's an issue of significance?
Correct. It means that, so for example, if I'm carrying a very small amount, so too small for it to be significant, so I'm still carrying. The act is the same. It's just not enough for me to care about. Right, so I'm not tied for it. Right, so then the question is, so what is the status of that? Right, so that we'll have to get to, it's a whole separate discussion. We're not up to the sugya yet, but there is a sugya of Chatzi Shir, which is a sugya in other areas of the Torah, but it comes up in Shabbos as well. That, so for example, I'm not allowed to eat a Kedayas of Chazir. If I eat a Kedayas of Chazir, I'm going to get Malchus. So Kedayas is the Shir. But the Gemara says, if I have less than a Kedayas, so I can't get Malchus, but it's still Asur Menat Torah. My folks, the Gemara, we pass it, it's Asur Menat Torah. So when it comes to Shabbos, what's the story? So when it comes to Shabbos, it's likely, it's a Machlokes, we'll get to it, but it's likely there's an Isur Menat Torah as well for less than a Shir. So it's Asur Menat Torah for me to carry anything on Shabbos, for me to cook anything on Shabbos. But it only becomes punishable at a certain point. So this approach is basically saying that point is the point of significance. You're carrying when you carry anything. You're cooking when you cook anything. But it only becomes worthy of our notice for you to get punished at a certain level. But in these malachos, less than that, it's not just not significant. It's nothing. Now, why are we saying it's nothing? Johnny?
I was just saying, why are we running between these malachos and
other ones? Oh, okay. So then that's the next stage of the question. So what is it that's so nothing dick about less than here? So there are two different ways, at least two different ways of seeing it. There are some, like for example, if you look at the Karen Over here, Karen Over is a classic acronym of the Daf, Yitzchok of Karlin. So the Karen Over suggests that here it's really just an issue of degree. It is similar to the Shir by everything else, but it takes it even farther. That here the Shir gets so significant, so insignificant, that it's not just not significant, it disappears off the radar screen. It's completely not there at all. It's completely, not just that we're not noticing it, but it's so insignificant that it becomes actually nothing. Subatomic. While there are others, maybe a little bit harder to understand why that should be true. It's the quizzical look on Sam's face, which is understood. But there are others who say something which is a little bit more understandable. Such as, for example, the Sfas Emes that we have read, we also have a commentary on the Gemara. And others have this approach as well. But no, that it's not an issue of significance at all. It's that you have, let's say, weaving. So weaving, already, is about bringing two threads together. If you only have one thread, then what are you doing? That's not called weaving at all. But these malachos are defined by combining two entities. Not combining two entities, it's not just a question of a threshold of significance. It's not an active malacha at all. The problem is, on the one hand, that's a little better than the first theory because it's more absolute. It doesn't say there's a certain quantity or point where things disappear. The problem is, does it work well for every example? One of these malachos seems to be particularly challenging for that interpretation. Think about it for a second, which malach? Kitzah. Kitzah is not one of the lists, but one of the ones that the Mishnah talks about. the toast flavor. Tira, it really is. What about kosei? Yeah, right, so two letters. So you're going to tell me that if I write one letter, that that's not called writing? I can hear it when it talks about weaving, when it talks about things that are specifically about connecting two items. But you're going to tell me that if I write one letter, that's a definitional issue?
Then you have to write a second letter.
Is
there a word that's like one letter?
So, okay, so you could say, yeah, maybe that's true. So you could say yes, because writing means writing words. And therefore, if words can have a minimum of two letters, so yeah, that's true, that kosei does not exist on a one-letter level. Okay, we have first.
Sure, sure, drawing is also.
Oh, drawing, correct. So drawing for sure is going to be significant even in one. So then how do we reconcile that? That's a part of the question.
Also, gematria, we use letters as numerals.
Oh, you think letter is a number, so a letter could be a word. Okay, Zion could be seven. Okay, point well taken. You can convey a message with a letter, so you're not so bowled over by that approach. However,
this is what he was saying about it.
Got it.
Again, one hieroglyphic on the wall, because we made it.
You can theoretically convey, so you're saying you believe you can or you cannot convey something with one symbol.
For the most part, you don't.
You don't, you're saying, so maybe it is definitional.
Or nothing? Contextual.
Okay. The Dasik Shtetl brings up the suggestion that how was kosei used in the Mishnah?
Not very much.
Right, so what would we do with it? It's like the... Right, we want to match different items that have the same letter written on them. So, it's all about bringing together two letters in the Mishnah. So maybe, therefore, the definition of kosei, if it traces to the Mishkan, so then it's all about two letters rather than one. That's a little difficult, though, because we had to write the letter there first in order to bring it. So we see that writing one letter was itself certainly a part of the process of building the Mishkan. It's hard to say it's less a part of the process than others preparatory actions. That's it.
So we just told that it was the models are based on avodas in the Mishkan and not was built up to like the Makal Rashi or Pai. It wouldn't be a problem.
There are a lot of other things that lead up to it. No one says it only goes to the mission. The Rapai says it also
goes to the mission.
Right, and so if you want to do all the things like Zorei, everything done out in the field, Pashas would not meet the standard. So that's, you have to figure out exactly how Kosave works out in this whole story. Yes, sir.
Just how we have this differentiation, how do we understand Soser in the mission? Which doesn't mention Soser
on Manas, that's the next closest. Almanas, and that I wouldn't necessarily get into so much because the other malachos, when the malachos had drawn the almanas idea, we'll get into it. But it's two separate considerations. So if you want to use the mission as introductory point to all of these yisodos, it's worth mentioning. But here, this mission, this Tosfos talks about shiurim, or shtei osios as a shiurim type of example. While the next Tosfos raises the issue of which malachos have an almanas. Malachos are defined by almanas, if the Mishnah says almanas or not.
Right.
That's a separate question.
I'm saying, did you hear if the Mishnah felt that it was necessary to mention something that's essential to its definition, mm-hmm. in some of them versus other ones, so why wouldn't it mention it by all of them? I mean, Soser, I think, is the only one that mentioned it.
So maybe you could say that Soser really is a malach in and of itself, it's just that it would be hotter if it's not almanas lifeldos because of external consideration of the calculus. There might be room to say that. There might be room to say that a malacha could have a definition and still be positive, and that's why the mission may not get into it. That's subject to the next one. We'll probably push that off for a later date.
How does Kosei fit into the Mishkan?
So in the Mishkan, Kosei was used to identify different parts that come together. So you have a letter here and a letter there, and you know where to bring the two letters together, like a model set. Any do-it-yourself construction object that comes with part A and part B. So he was trying to suggest that maybe it's about putting letters together, and therefore letters aren't coming together, then it's not the definition of the model.
Also, they're just so bothering me. Like, where's Hotsah? It's clearly it's the Adon Malach
Well, why is Hotsah...
I mean, it's not the fusion of two things together. together. It's not a good.
The Motzah is not listed here. Okay, the Mishnah, Tosfos points out that there are some malachos that are identified with the shear. And it's not talking about Motzah.
And I said, the handful of malachos that it focuses on are Kevatimirun, Ore, Kotseya, Tofer, Kosev. Those that have the shtey in them. So why are those identified? The suggestion is that maybe those are definitional.
Because it seems that most of the malachos seem to have either a fusion or a limitation of two things. Tying, untying, bolrer, separating,
there's some
racing.
There's some large element about that, although we're not necessarily positing there has to be the case.
Maybe even what Sada seems like. Most of your trilogy, you're bringing together two trios.
Yeah, you could be right, basically, because if we're saying in general that a malacha means a change in the world, so very often that's what changes. Things are either together or not together, and very often that is the connection of your difficulty with Hotzah, maybe consistent with the whole Hotzah, Malacha, Zeruah issue, but it's not necessarily tied into the Kosev. So in terms of Kosev, it also has a practical ramification. It has many practical ramifications, but there was an example of Kajib Lavarav, we mentioned the other day, has a tshuva, practically oriented tshuva. If he was in Lublin, this is where he doesn't identify, complicated by the way he was talking about, but this is in the pre-World War II days, people were conscripted into the army, and they had to sign up for the army, and they were called up on Shabbos as well. And signing up involved putting your fingerprint in ink and one making a seal with one fingerprint. So he was assuming that that's like one letter. It's called Roshen. You're marking down, which is an aspect of Kosev. And that maybe we should say, okay, one fingerprint is like one letter. So is there a tzad that maybe one letter is significantly more makel than other Yisurim? And maybe we should say Kosev one os is enough, is a lower, not just a significance issue, but really a definitional issue. And maybe there's room to be makel to allow this. The FD doesn't have a makel inclination about this, but part of this whole discussion is how much weight put in what the Magen Avos is essentially saying in this Mishnah, that the malachos that are identified with a shear in the Mishnah are defining what they're about, and less than that, there's not even a malach. Kachbal Rav wrote this tshuva. He was a student of the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer has a tshuva where he discusses this issue in general, and he makes the following point. Now we talk about then we'll get up to the issue of Katzi Shir, and we mentioned somewhat of a machlokas whether or not it applies to Shabbos. So there is a Rashbam in commentary of the Master, probably should put it on Mark Thomas. The Rashbam says that Chatzi Shir is an issue on Shabbos, is a p'tur on Shabbos, because it's a lack in machsheves. And he said there's an idea of malachas machsheves, and we're not totally sure what malachas machsheves means, whether it refers to intent or refers to something a little broader than that. But apparently machsheves requires a number of components. The Rashbam suggests that something that is insignificant, which is not worthy of notice, chashivas, is lacking in malachas machsheves. As mentioned last week, there are many, many different dinim that are tied to malachas machsheves, at least 9 or 10 different halachos that are tied to malachas machsheves. So perhaps this is one of them also, that less than a shir on Shabbos is lacking in machsheves. The Avnei Nezer says, we have a phrase here, malachas machsheves, is two words. So all the other shiurim that apply to Hilchos Shabbos but are not mentioned in the Mishnah, that is an issue in machsheves. If I carry too small an amount, if I cook too small an amount, I'm lacking in machsheves. The things that are identified in the Mishnah, if I don't meet that standard, I'm lacking in the malachas half of the equation. The malacha itself defined by the combination of these two items, let's say, and therefore failing to meet that standard, if I'm only weaving one strand, that's a deficiency in the malachas part of the phrase. While other shear are a deficiency in the machsheves part of the brain. So this issue, again, is an important halakha l'maisa, because, again, we'll discuss head-on the question of katzishir. So if we were assuming, let's posit for a moment, which is probably the majority of you, that katzishir is also in the Torah on Shabbos. So therefore, if I'm going to cook an insignificant amount, I'm not chayiv, that's an issur min haTorah. When we're carrying a significant amount of tzedakah on the table. So what are we saying when it comes to these laws? If I do less than that, is it wonder? Is this poster suggesting? Or again, it gets to our whole discussion yesterday. Keep in mind, poster doesn't actually give this answer. So all we have on the side who's looking at others who do have an answer. Are they saying that it's mutter to do less than this? There's no kind of shared concept at all? Mutter to write one letter on Shabbos? Mutter to be already one strand, whatever that means in practice? So it's difficult to say that. It's clear in the Mishnah Berurah. If you look at the Mishnah Berurah, look in Simon Shin Mem. It's clear, look at the Bir Halacha over there. He states very clearly that there is an Issur to write one letter on Shabbos. Oh, so then that's where the question comes up. That is he arguing on this whole principle? Or no, maybe he's not arguing on this whole principle. But maybe even those who advocate this principle would agree that this is Rabban. This is Rabban that has it. It's just this is the right, so that it's not going to necessarily qualify. So there is a whole discussion. What are the implications of this position? If one takes this answer to posters, and one assumes it's the correct answer, and again, it's a popular answer and one reminded the later acronym. So are we saying the halacha that less than this threshold is mutter? Or are we saying that it's also midrabana? Or are we saying it's issur d'oraisa, maybe it's some other type of issur d'oraisa? So that's an important question which you don't have a direct answer to. So the same thing, yes, it's at least possibly the Rabban. And that's how many assume, but that was the intent of the Mogen Avot and his colleagues to say, may not be this or the right, but it's certainly at least this or the Rabban.
Hi. When you say it's this or the Rabban, is it this or the Rabban Chatzishir, or is it just like a separate?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's the Chatzishir discussion. So we'll talk about that when we get to Chatzishir. Chatzishir, in terms of the Zaka Shabbos, just so you know, so it's a Sliga Nayim Dalit, which is the next daf, so you think, okay, we're pretty close to there, but we're really pretty far from there because Ayin Gimel has a big chunk of the Balakla, so we're going to be on Ayin Gimel for a while. But I do want to maybe skip to Ayin Dalit before Yom Kippur, because since it's a major Yom Kippur, so we can have some Yom Kippur topics combined with Shabbos topics and get a little bit of both at the same time. So I would like to do the Sliga of Chatzishir by Shabbos before Yom Kippur, whether or not more likely we won't be up to it. So, God willing, before you get there, we'll address what that means. It's an important question you're asking. We'll try to talk about that before you get there. So now, we need to know to get through this Tosus. It's an important question whether are those Achronim who take this approach, are they saying the halacha that there's no issue here, or there's an issue of Rabbanan? Important practical question. Again, it's likely there's an issue of Rabbanan. Yes.
I don't understand how the Mishnah Berurah, isn't that directly contradictory to what we said with the Miri?
So, well, he's talking about, the Miri is talking about carrying the Rosh Hashanah Rabban less than Dalet Amos. He's not addressing that. He's addressing writing one letter.
The point is that we're given a specific amount, you're doing less than it. The Miri says that's not the Israel.
Right, it's only against the Miri if you assume, if you put the two parts together, if you say that this post is the same, writing less than two letters is like carrying less than Dalet Amos. If you assume that connection, so then that's the Miri comes into the equation. If you don't agree that that's what this post is saying, then you don't have to argue on the Miri, you can argue on this answer to the post.
Same as your sister.
Right, you don't necessarily combine the two. So if you assume that it's comparable, writing less than two letters is comparable to carrying less than Dalet Amos, which is still going to be necessary also, by the way.
Right. Which is not going to be a chatzi shir, it'll be called a chatzi melacha. We'll talk about this in context of chatzi shir. So this is the whole discussion. So the Bir Halacha certainly assumes that it's prohibited to write one letter. And then he goes into the discussion that it's the Nisra D'Oraisa or Nisra D'Rabbanan. So in theory, one can hold this whole approach in Tosfos and say everything's still Nisra D'Rabbanan. The Bir Halacha is probably not saying this approach, because even if he says it's Rabbanan, he says it in the context of other Halachos, he probably does not necessarily sign on to this whole Torah. And it's Feres Yisrael, the Mishnah is, it's also living around the same time period as the Talmud of the Kiva Eger. So again, it's still not earlier than the 600-year gap in this question of the mission. So Feres Yisrael suggests that maybe we can come at it from a different direction. That maybe these are all malachos where you would think the shear should be higher. Because you might think, what is, let's say, our ego about it? So you're weaving a garment. So what is a garment? A garment should have to have some significance. If I weave two strands together, it's not useful for anybody. I can't really do anything with two strands weaved together, woven together.
Well, it's a functional unit of making a shirt or making a garment piece of clothing.
Depends what you mean by functional. It's no function to that entity.
I mean, if you think about, in biology, the functional unit is a cell. The functional unit of us today is an atom. So it's the functional unit of Oreg is weaving once.
Well, the action, the functional action, because the unit is a strand. Right, so it's only significant if you want to look at the object, then the object can say the unit is a strand. If you want to look at the action, then you question what significance does that have. Okay?
So what point is you're right.
Mm-hmm. So when,
I can understand a
regard,
using a
vector. Just again, post
David
the odd man
out. Right.
Once again, it doesn't seem to fully fit the answer. So apparently saying that two letters wouldn't necessarily have obvious significance to you. So the Mishnah needs to tell you that it does have significance. The Mishnah needs to tell you that even this amount.
What's the Havamina right?
Yeah, it's easier to see. It's easier to see when you come to something like Arvida. You're right, again, that just as with everything else, Ksiva is the harder part of the rough edge. But, apparently, we would have thought it was something more important.
According to our definition of work, where we say Shabbos and Malacha about it being a creative act, so today, if you were to be able to really relay a message to somebody by writing one letter, wouldn't that go under that Makir Patish category and be Isra D'Oraisa in that sense?
Well, I don't have to go to the Makir Patish category because you don't have to create a new Am. Then the only question of whether it reaches the threshold of a Malacha, the question of whether it being Isra D'Oraisa is one letter, if that's the issue. It's hard to really pin anything down here because it's all, you have to theorize and an answer to a closeness and figure out what the issue is and plug it back in. So either way, it's going to be awesome, probably awesome in Adobe. The question is it going to be something to be evaluated for, or something to be left in the model based on the results of the again, in fact, which is exactly why the touch of weather dealt with it in that context of the army, because it was relevant in that type of exam. Okay, so these are some of the issues which are going to come out of our defining what a malacha is. And this is, again, an important introductory level, that what is the act of a malacha is a malacha. Sometimes it's not significant, but it's there. And sometimes the whole malacha itself only achieves that status by having a certain type of impact, which may be why these malachas are set aside. So we were almost at a time I wanted to we spoke about, but I also did make a commitment that we would start with Zoraya by today. So let's just spend a few minutes planting ourselves within the law of Zoraya, and then we will really pick up on it tomorrow until the next day. Okay, so talking about Shabbos and Mishnah. Any verb you use starts to sound like a pun. It sounds like selling the law is kind of canceled. So when it comes to Zoraya, the first issue we're going to talk about is the put it on the table, especially because we just raised a couple of issues related to this. So every malacha that we're going to talk about, every malacha that comes up in Malchus Shabbos, so we're going to have a responsibility to figure out, like we said, what is our action, what is our tachlis,
So we're just, what's our actions are for the law? And what effect are we trying to bring about? What is the path? And in what way, if the assumption is that each of these halachos somehow changes the world a little bit, so it helps us to try to pin down what is the change, what is the pathos that is affected by each of these 39 halachos. And sometimes you can simply just by translating the word into English, you can pin that down. So if somebody you want to translate to what is zoreh, what does it really mean?
Seeding.
Okay, so what does seeding mean? You're saying?
It sounds like you're just dropping seeds on the ground.
Okay, so we'll have to talk about that. But we'll certainly see when it comes to Tolvos for sure, probably even other Tolvos that are connected to Zoreh, that there are certainly many things which are going to be included in the broader realm of Zoreh that cannot be called seeding. So we're going to have to find probably a broader definition. Is there another way to define the term of Zoreh? No,
sorry.
Encouraging growth. Encouraging growth. And so encouraging growth means that you are cultivating the growth of a plant. So that might become a very relevant definition. Maybe we'll see that the parts are going to play out that way. So as we will get into by tomorrow, God willing, there clearly is ambiguity when it comes to Zriya. What is our goal? And it could be that the two answers that were just given are maybe represent the pu'ula and the tachlis. And maybe the pu'ula of Zriya is seeding, putting a seed into the ground. But why am I putting a seed into the ground? I'm putting a seed into the ground because I know that what will happen is that the seed will grow. So maybe the blocking is defined by a tachlis, a goal of encouraging growth. And the action that I do to promote that growth is putting a seed into the ground. Maybe one of many other things which promote growth are therefore perhaps going to be toldos of Zoreya, other actions that share the same goal. So something growing is going to be a change in the world, and bringing about that change might be our working definition of Zoreya. But might not be. We're going to have to see how the different parts play out. Now, even growth is an ambiguous term. What does growth mean? Is growth a quantitative term? Making it grow more than it was? Or is it kind of an absolute term? That a seed in my hand is not going to change in any way, while a seed in the ground is going to sprout. So it's about shifting from one state to the other. That's also going to be an important thing we're going to try to figure out. What do you mean by growth? So just trying to define the malacha, you're going to have this issue of concept. The Malacha is just trying to essentially translate the word into English, which will consistently be a helpful endeavor. Try to translate the word into English and see what you come up with. It's going to be fraught with different analytical challenges and practical challenges. So that's something we have to keep in mind as we approach all of the questions that are going to come up in the Gemara and elsewhere in terms of Malachas and Zereya, Malachas and Hadriya. You're going to draw on this issue, it's going to come down to this. What is the Pu'ula and the Tachlis of Zoreya? What are we doing and what are we trying to do? So the open question that we'll just mention is the question of, is there a shear for Zoreya? What do we know about this so far? Is there a shear for Zoreya?
Yes
or no? Yes or no, exactly. You can never go wrong. As Jack Lesson pointed out, if you say something is my focus, you're almost never wrong. You're called on against your will to the same sense. So it's probably a machlokes. Although, as we'll see, it's actually a machlokes if it's a machlokes. What do we mean by that? What's the view of the Rambam, for example? So what's the shear for Israel? Kulshim. Okay, so that much we're pretty confident about. That the Rambam says that the shear is a kulshim. The question is, does Rashi disagree? So if all we had was our own Mishnah, so then we could probably say it seems pretty likely that Rashi does disagree. Right? And this was the view that the Prima Gaudim, for example, and many Achronim took, that there's a machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam. Because what does Rashi say on our Mishnah? Right? The same Rashi that we looked at before, because he talks about Sidura de Pas, So the end of that Rashi, Ha'ofeh, says, V'shiurin sho'elu kigrogris. Sounds like it's talking about almost all of those first 11 malachos. The first Sigdur Depas, 11 malachos. The shir is a grogris. Chutz me, not Zareya, but chutz me choresh. And choresh to cholshu, that's a cholshu, as the Gemara is going to say later. So it sounds very much, if we read the Rashi in a simple, straightforward way, that the first 11 are all grogris, with the exception of choresh. Happens to be, maybe we'll talk about this more tomorrow, that there are many who disagree with this reading of Rashi, really pushed by the fact that there are other Rashis that sound differently, but also really pushed more by Svari. The question of what's the source is said one way or another, where did Rashi get his answer from? So really, it's a Svari question. What reason is there to say that there should be a shir or not have a shir? What pushes us from Shas or from our understanding of Zareya to tell us whether there should be a shir or not? So there are some who suggest that all of this ties in to the question that we were talking about in our whole introductory discussion. What is Shabbos about? Is Shabbos about your disturbing your rest? Or is Shabbos defined by the impact on the world? Because in terms of impact, how much of a planting do you need to do to have an impact? How much do you quantity? Sorry?
One seed.
Almost nothing, right? Any amount, one seed, can turn into a huge tree. So the impact, usually the other way around, here it's interesting here, impact requires very little. Because the seed grows into something bigger. But maybe if we're looking at you, we want to look at your effort or your amount of input here, and then maybe we have some type of threshold of significance. So if there is a machlokes as to what the shear of Zriya is, maybe that issue is what animates the machlokes. Maybe the machlokes is defined by what our focus is on in Hilchos Shabbos. But, as we'll discuss a little bit more tomorrow, it's a machlokes, if it's a machlokes, so you guys said you're safe, if you always say it's a machlokes, there is a different version of that. It's machlokes, if there is a machlokes. So are those who maintain that Rashi agrees with the Rambam, that Rashi also doesn't see much of the shear here, and the question is, how do we read our Rashi? So that we'll have to pick up from tomorrow when we start Zriya in earnest. So just to quickly review what we spoke about today, so we talked about, to finish off the points about Shlichus by Shabbos, and the question of whether Shabbos is about you or about the action. So we talked about the question of Tosefta Shabbos that we mentioned yesterday, but also introduced the issue of Yantar Sheni. If you have two people next to each other, one is during Yantar, one poison. We talked about the question of Cholet, how Cholet is a general question, whether it's Hutcher or Kliya, and many assume the Halakha that's connected to the whole issue of whether Shabbos is about the action or about the result. And then we talked also about Hotzah, the idea that many Akronim assume that Hotzah is separate from this whole discussion, because of its halacha grew its status, and we talked about the Dvar Yevashulim's understanding that since the whole thing requires a hanacha, therefore by definition, it's the opposite of everything we've been talking about till now. So we mentioned how Rav Zevin uses Hotzah being called Malacha Gerua as a proof to his whole argument, because the only reason to call it Malacha Gerua is if we look at impact. If we look at the individual is doing the Malacha just as much as everything else. So if we look at impact, that's where it gets some type of a grua status. And then we suggest that essentially as our approach to resolve this whole issue is that really Shabbos essentially, let's call it for lack of a better term, an Isser Gavra. It's about your being at rest and about your not doing a malacha. So what is a malacha? A malacha is defined by external considerations, by how it affects the world. So it's kind of a unique combination of a focus on the Gavra, but what the Gavra is not supposed to do is defined by external impact, which leads us into an approach towards all of Hilchos Shabbos when we're looking at both the Pa'ula, i.e. what you're doing, and the Tachlis, i.e. the impact that it has on the world. And then we look back to the Mishnah, we look at the Tosfos, which says, how come the Mishnah doesn't list well for Shiurim, but still lists certain malachos in the context of Ha'orek Shteh, Ha'Kosei Shteh, Ha'Kosei Shteh, etc. we mentioned the approach of the Magen Avos that many other Achronim share, that other Malachos are shared with the matter of significance, but the Malacha is still there. While here, these Malachos are defined by having this aspect in hand. We mentioned the funny example of the prohibition of marrying two sisters, where clearly no one would say there's any prohibition at all of marrying one sister. It only becomes relevant when there are two sisters involved in the mix. So too, perhaps those Malachos are comparable to this. Same way that the Eri on Daf Gimel said that carrying two apples is not a chatzi shir, it's a chatzi malacha. It's something lacking in the malacha itself. Now we discussed that within this whole Magen Avos approach, there are two ways of looking at it. Either that it's such a small amount, it's not even registering on the radar screen, or the malacha is defined by the combination of two elements, like weaving two strands together, and less than two, you have nothing. Not related to the malach, and in general, with all the explanations, co-saved a little bit beyond the now. You mentioned Constantine Stettner's suggestion that maybe it's because of the Mishkan co-saved required bringing the two letters together, but we questioned whether that's a perfect way of describing what co-saved was. So we mentioned the Kajim lovers, Chuba, about somebody who has to use one fingerprint in order to register for the army. Is there any room to say that that's less of a malach than other things? And we talked about Malachas Machshavas, the Rashban saying that Chatzi Shir on Shabbos is a deficiency of Machshavas. We have the Nezer saying, so normal Shirin, the issue is Machshavas. These ones that are singled out, the issue is Malachas. It's lacking in Malachas Machshavas. And we mentioned also the approach to the Pharisee Israel that said in the opposite direction, you might think that these Malachas require more than the Shir the Mishnah mentioned, because maybe they don't register at all. So it's worth that. The Mishnah is telling us essentially a bummer. And then we raise the practical question, is there an aftimina from this? Are we essentially saying that less than this is mutter mitaraisa, mutter completely? It's hard to say that, but is that the case? Because the chatzishir normally is also in the Torah. So how does this fit into the whole equation? One parenthetically mentioned, by the way, and it's a very practical issue, stuff I'm posting, but the question how far you go when you read something into a poster, you read something into a Mishnah. So there are those you see sometimes in the later literature that says, oh, well, if we already know those opinions, for example, that say that Chatzi Shir is mutter min haTorah, so then this answer is difficult because what's the Chiddush in the Mishnah because it comes out of the mutter anyway. I don't think you're included to say that the Mishnah has to tell us the Chiddush that has to be different to Halacha. It could be a conceptual Chiddush. Tosafot's question is not why is there a Pasuk telling us something? Why is there a separate Mishnah here? We don't have we just have a phrase that's a little bit unusual. So it's enough that it gives us a conceptual finish. But it could be that it has significant practical implications. So that's the issue that's discussed in the Bir Halacha and elsewhere. What exactly is the prohibition of writing a letter? Is that Asur min haTorah? Is it Asur min haTorah for a different reason than Kachashir? Is it Asur min haRabbanan? Is it Mutter? There is an extensive discussion all coming from this point. How exactly do we understand the focus here that goes to up on in this mission. Then we started off very briefly our investigation into Malacha Zerei, which we'll pick up tomorrow, discuss this question of Shiurim. First tried to define Malacha Zerei, we had a few suggestions, all of them left us still with some ambiguity as far as what exactly our scope is. And then in terms of the Shiur of Zerei, so we saw that there may be Machlokas, this is Machlokas, the Rambam, which will call it all by the way, maintain that there's no shear for Zaria, any amount is enough. Rashi, it sounds like in our mission, like he's saying that everything in Zidur the Pas is a groveress except for Horish. Sounds like not except for Zoraya. So it could be this Mahokas, Rashi, and the Ramah. That's the way many such Kunimagans assume. You mentioned the explanation that's offered that it all ties into our discussion till now about are we looking at the individual who has to have something more significant to have an effort, or we're looking at the impact. We're here, the impact can be great for a very small amount, if there is indeed an focus. And then we indicated that there are many who suggest that Rashi agrees with the Rambam. We'll have to figure out how to make our mission fit with our Rashi and our mission fit with that. So God willing, we'll pick up from that tomorrow. Tomorrow is a Tuesday. Tuesday we have an early schedule. So I believe the schedule is we have later from 9 till 10:45. And then Shira Mishnah and paper is 10:45. Till 12:15, I think. We'll see exactly how that plays out. Those are the
Those are rough numbers. Okay, you should have a wonderful Yom Malacha, whatever you want to call it, Yom Avoda. Think about the Malachas on Labor Day, and that's the Shem will...